Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. We're here to empower people, and I can promise you this is a very diverse set of topics today we're going to discuss. You'll have a chance to call in and share your points of view, which I value. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. We're going to talk about almonds, omega-3 fatty acids, our brain's physical shape, processed meats, early supplementation, and cold homes. You'll see how all this can enhance our longevity. First, from King's College London comes a study about almonds and how they support your gut microbiome. Now, we already knew that almonds were a good source of plant-based protein. They had the omega-3 fatty acids. But the new study says that eating just 56 grams, and that's a little amount, that's only about 2 ounces of almonds a day, the equivalent of about 46 almonds, can improve gut health by promoting levels of what is called bitrate. And the research involved 3 groups replacing their regular snacks with whole almonds or ground almonds. And the authors conclude that incorporating almonds into the diet could be a way of increasing fiber and also helping stop triggering a lot of gut symptoms. An important player in gut health appears to be, let me spell it for you, butyrate. That's a short-chain fatty acid that supports the health of the microbiome itself. This was published in Medical News Today. And so if you want a healthier gut, which also means a healthier liver, a brain, and lungs, then have just a handful of almonds each day. Or you can throw them into a smoothie. Or you can have like a large tablespoon of almond butter into a smoothie or just as a snack. The Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology published an article in their journal that shows adding omega-3 fatty acids helps with the clearance of metabolites from your brain. What we frequently forget is just how phenomenal our body chemistry is. And all cells create a living environment. They are living organisms, but they have the capacity to work in perfect harmony your entire life, unless there's some form of dysregulation, in which case then that's how we end up with cancer. But people forget that it would be like if you never took out the garbage, you never flushed the toilet. At what point? In a day, a week, a month? Would it be just, well, it would take away the quality of life in that environment. The cells also have to clean out the clutter, the debris, dead cells, and sebum and different oils. That's what comes out in our skin. That's why we should use a nice, not a harsh brush, but some form of brush that allows exfoliation, because it cleanses the skin, same way with the scalp. So this shows that the omega-3 fatty acids helps your brain, in effect, clean out the system, getting the waste out of the brain and promoting the clearance of metabolites, including amyloid B peptides, a primary culprit in Alzheimer's disease. So a healthier brain, take your omega-3 fatty acids. That's in addition to all the other things it does for the heart and arteries. From the University of Ottawa comes an interesting study. It's based on the notion that an experience external to the body, not something we have ingested, that has been affected by disease or damage through the physical injury, can measurably change the physical properties of an organ as intrinsic to our functioning as the brain. Now that's revelatory, but can we prove cause and effect? And a group from the University of Ottawa found cause and effect. So we think that everything is biological, but there's more to it. And when we think the wrong thoughts, when we're depressed, when we're angry, when we're rageful, when we're envious, when we're jealous, that too many people, unfortunately, today suffer from, they think that that's just an emotional reaction. It's more. It actually can change our biochemistry. It has an impact upon our DNA. And in fact, in this case, the scan of brains of teens for evidence of damage to the hippocampus. And in a previous study, neuroscientist Martin Teicher scanned the brains of 63 young adults as part of a study into verbal victimization. Teicher found that among the subjects who reported being the victims of verbal bullying, there were abnormalities in the corpus calcium. This region of the brain consists of a bundle of fibers connecting the brain's left and right hemispheres and is known to be important in visual processing and memory. The neurons in the corpus callosum of the bullied subjects were found to have less of the myelin coating that boosts communications between brain cells. So let's put it a different way. When we have a lack of focus on what is important and we absorb other people or an environment's negative energy, creating anxiety, depression, even suicidal thoughts, it's more than just emotional. It's also neurobiological, and that is dangerous. So imagine that you have two different processes, one where a person, through no fault of their own, is victimized, bullied, yelled at, demeaned, in some way even made to be canceled. Think of all the thousands and thousands of good people doing good work in medicine and science, but who happen, as orthodox as they are, as historically in alignment with everything that's gone on with our National Institute of Health, they decide that the protocols issued during the last 2.5 years were not conducive to either stopping the spread of the virus or helping people who might be infected. In the process, that creates fear, and how you deal with the fear is an individual case-by-case situation. But also, think of the person who feels, maybe a young person, maybe a person that has grown up in some form of social or ideological bubble. And that's frequently the case with a lot of professional children. I've counseled a lot of those children. I've counseled their parents with the children. So it's something I'm very familiar with. It's not hypothetical. And now the child believes that whatever mistakes are made in life, there'll be someone there to clean up the mess. So if there's no deterrent to bad behavior, lack of manners, lack of work ethic, lack of being honest, then why should you bother being honest and conscientious and showing a good character that at one time was expected of everyone, no matter what your class in society? So now you got two groups of people, one that believes that anything you say that they can construe as a microaggression is causing them harm. In effect, you've said the wrong word, so their life no longer has meaning because you are an enemy and you said the wrong thing. And this is the society we're living in today. It's permeated everywhere. No one thought that this would metastasize. It has, big time. Do you remember about 4 years ago, more or less, I was watching an interview. A friend called and said, "You got to watch this interview. You won't believe it." So I watched this interview, and here was this person on saying that it's a serious bodily aggression to change the diapers of a baby without the baby's permission. All right, well, that begs a question. How would the baby know to give you permission to change its diapers when it doesn't know what a diaper is and it doesn't know how to communicate? It's absorbing information, but it doesn't have the faculty to process it intellectually. Then it went further than that. It went to, you cannot, if you're a married couple and you're walking down the street, you cannot just hold the other person's hand. That's an aggression. That's a form of abuse. And then it went further. You can't cuddle at night unless in the middle of the night, before you cuddle your loved one, you get permission. And it had all these other rules, brand new rules, just made up, that we as a society should adhere to, all of society. And then it, 2 years ago, when Dr. Harari got on the scene, he had been on the scene, but really unknown. But now he's full-fledged, you know, just he's the person that goes in and cuts down all the virgin forest so they can build something that is of no use to anyone but themselves. So he was out there talking about how useless and worthless people are. Okay, we're supposed to accept that, unless you're one of the elites, or you're a professional and will devote your time and energy, because it's in your best interest, which it is, to go along with whatever's being said so that you benefit and you're not punished. Okay. Now, what happens is one day people finally awakened. Now, what causes different people to awaken, the silent majority, we're going to show in the rest of this program after our break. But something else is happening. For the person who can't get over any statement that they're not happy with, any environment, any emotion, anything at all, they walk around as if they have unlimited numbers of stress points. Say the wrong thing, don't look the right way, don't answer the question as they need an answer, and suddenly they take on the badge of being a martyr, which allows them to engage in their rage, their obscene statements, and lack of any decorum, because, mind you, this didn't start with you saying something and they not finding it funny and wanting you dead in your career. This started with their parents. And I personally, I'm not asking anyone else, but I've counseled tens and tens of thousands of professionals. In my opinion, the majority of them are the worst parents in history. They did everything wrong. I won't go into that, what they did wrong and what the consequences are, but I'm not alone in that assessment. And the consequence is, this is what was created. What do you think is going to happen to that person's biochemistry? What do you think is going to happen to their brain, their digestive system, their heart, when they're stressed all the time and cortisol is up? That can cause a regular heartbeat. That can lead to a stroke. The consequences of feeling like a victim and then justifying it by putting yourself in a position to argue that you are a victim for life, for eternity. Oh, there is no eternity in these individuals, because that's another thing that's come also. The denunciation of all religions as if you're just a bunch of stupid, immature, mindless people who just accept any superstition as if there is any truth to it. Well, of course, if you said that about an individual person who follows the Muslim belief, then you're Islamic phobic. But when you say it to an entire world of Muslims, then you're just being so cool and so hip, and you're right on. Scream it loud. Scream it now. And the same is true with everything. The anti-racists are the most racist. Everything in the world right now is upside down. So imagine what follows being upside down with your ideology, your behavior, your manners, your morals, your ethics, and your sense of self. Well, there's a little karmic lesson in all this. Your body is going to change for the worse at the cellular level, to follow what you believe. The more you believe in something that is negative and toxic, vengeance and violence, you're also turning on yourself. Just suggesting, and this, the science is there to prove it. The whole field of epigenetics proves it. Separately, the World Health Organization, where I'm going to be presenting an article probably in the next day or two, and challenging its new concept of a treaty. They're trying to get through a treaty, and they've got a lot of important sponsors like Great Britain, that shouldn't surprise anyone, and France, and the United States. But they want all the major countries of the world to agree to it. Why? Because a treaty exceeds the sovereignty of any given law in a country that participates. As a result, any laws that you may have in a state that protects your well-being, the sanctity of your body, what goes into it, and that is exceeded by the World Health Organization. And yet, not a single story discussing the arguments for or against this, and no debates. I'll give you the whole story in depth and why this is important to you in an upcoming show. But anyhow, bacon, ham, and sausage have the same cancer risks as cigarettes. Okay, that's not good. But it's even worse when you consider how many people are so focused upon wanting something to eat that they like without considering where did it come from, how is it produced, and is it safe or not? And what happens if I'm not going to die today from eating it, but in 30 years if I keep eating it, will I die? But these are also people who frequently smoke. Now, the third part of this trioka of terrible health is drinking. Even social drinking. So how many people go out, have a meal, you see them advertised on television all the time, that's unhealthy, then they drink and they smoke. Well, if meat alone, if the pork in there alone is enough to cause cancer equal to what cigarettes, imagine then the carcinogenic elements of all those substances together. That's what we're seeing. And so therefore, one more reason to pay attention to what goes into your body. And finally, from the University of Amsterdam comes a study published in the FASEB, that's a leading scientific journal, that early supplementation may help offset early life stress on the adult brain. And that's what they found. In particular, it was methionine, B6 and B12, and folic acid, none of which, by the way, are made by your body and need to be ingested through diet. They found that early life stress reduces the levels of these nutrients in this laboratory experiment. So just make sure that children are getting their methionine, their B6, their folic acid, and B12. It'll make a difference in their health and their brain. Oh, and by the way, from University of Adelaide, which is in Australia, concerns about fuel poverty and people not being able to heat their homes adequately are not new to the United Kingdom. But these worries have been heightened by significant increases in energy costs and the cost of living crisis. And as winter approaches, things are about to get a lot worse. Cold temperatures suppress the immune system. Let me repeat that. Cold temperatures suppress the immune system. But we know relatively little about the effects on mental health. Our new research program shows that living in a cold home is a significant mental health risk. Living in a cold home can affect your mental health in several ways. And so try to understand that going into the winter. That's the latest on Health and the Healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break, but let me just mention for all of those of you who you can get the journal or all the health and nutrition update information every day sent right to your computer. You get up in the morning and there it is. So you're right up to date on everything you need to know. But also I want to make sure that people also can download the new multi-award-winning documentary on Science for Hire. If there's one documentary right now that we need to share with as many people as possible, this is it. And they can watch it for free by going to Rumble, Gary Nall videos. So it's not difficult, but we need to start getting out information that challenges them. All right. So here's how you get to Gary Nall Film Library. Again, Gary Nall Film Library. Is you go to the drop-down menu in search of channels instead of videos. Don't look under videos, look under channels. On Rumble's site, the library comes up when you put the name in, i.e. Gary Nall Film Library. So you go to Rumble, you go to channels instead of videos, and then you put in Gary Nall Film Library and it pops up. And I want to thank the nearly 30,000 people who've downloaded and watched it just in the last week or so. But we need this information to be seen by a lot of Americans to show them how the so-called objective science is not objective and is corporate science, not independent science. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world and all the different stations carrying this program. We're about to have an inflection at the level where the average person finally has a chance to say what's on their mind. We do that if we have no power, if we have no real representation. People lie in politics. They promise us if we give them our vote, that they will give us what we need to maintain our quality of life, our standard of living, security, etc. None of that has happened in decades through Republican and Democratic administrations. And one of the largest groups who were once Democrat or Republican but have saw the corruption in the lies, they become independent. And among those individuals something had to happen to get their attention. For a lot of parents, it was finally waking up and realizing what was being taught in the school system to their children without their knowledge or permission, and what that meant. And though you could agree or disagree with what this person is about to say, this is just a father who's getting up to a school board, and what he's going to read, and I'm going to warn you in advance, some of what he's going to read, you will not like to hear. So if you don't want to hear it, don't. And it's a four-minute clip, but this is a person that represents millions upon millions of parents who are concerned. When I was going to school, we never had a problem. Yes, not all curriculums were honest or accurate, but there was no effort to try to indoctrinate us at the level that people are being indoctrinated today, including saying that your mother and father are really not good for you, and you can't use the words mother, father, brother, sister. You can't use a lot of different words. And taking home a negative image of the parents, that's never happened. And yet it is, and has been, and it's spreading in above and beyond their denials. So since we never ask the average person or care what the average person has to say, the working class person is invisible in our society except when it comes to voting, let me tell you what I believe is going to be coming in full force from millions of people, their frustration at how utterly corrupt our entire educational systems have become. Here's just one person speaking their truth, may not be yours, but it's theirs.
And so you guys probably are aware that TPS and Mustang schools are going through some accreditation problems via HB 1775. You guys are going to have the same issue if you don't clean it up. And I'm going to find it, and I've got some connections that I've made over the last couple of years battling you guys that I'll bring that to bear. These books. This is in two elementary schools. It feels good to be yourself, a book about gender identity. Sanger and Will Rogers teaches the kids that the doctor is merely guessing whether it's a boy or a girl. That's a millstone offense. Explicit child rape, child molestation. Do these have academic value? You guys are going to have to answer that question. And it shouldn't take a form. If I send an email to a man who's in charge of protecting the innocence of our children, and the response is fill out a form, I would consider that a millstone offense. There's a rape of a 10-year-old girl, graphic, in this book. It's heartbreaking. By no means should there be a ban on books. Don't mistake what I'm saying for that. There ought to be academic books in the school libraries. And this problem, I never imagined it would be at my alma mater. I went from fourth grade up to Stillwater Public Schools. I'm an alum. And we have books after book after book after book. This at the junior high. This book contains sexually explicit assault and battery. I hesitate to read it. I don't feel comfortable reading it to adults. 13-year-olds can check this book out. And you guys have bought it for them and provided it for them. And it needs to be corrected ASAP. Are you going to eat her? Yeah, Earl, I'm going to eat her. Do you even know how to eat? No, not really. Papa Gaines never sat you down and said, son, one day you're going to have to eat. No. But he taught me how to eat a. Yep. I would teach you some technique, but it's a little complicated. Son, I don't have time for that. I got 20 over here I need to eat. Is that right? I'm on a deadline. It goes on and on and on and on and on and on. There are 79 in this book. 79. 51 shits, 11 dicks, 15 and 9 goddams, and a list goes on. And you guys need to fix it.
Okay. Those are his opinions. They may not be yours, but I'm merely playing this to let you know that the so-called woke academia, the woke people in our government who are creating a lot of absolutely abusive laws and rules are not allowing people to have even a voice and to speak back. You don't hear debates about this. You don't have open discussions. What you'll have is a frustrated parent having a discussion with their kids and seeing what's in the textbooks they're bringing home. And is it the right of the parent to decide what is moral, what is important in learning? And since when did we replace reading, writing, arithmetic, and basic learning skills and critical thinking skills for this type of text for a young person to read and be exposed to? That's the questions being asked. What do you think is going to happen when an entire nation of frustrated, angry parents finally find their voice? Interesting, because I don't see any of the polls out there discussing that these people even exist, let alone that their voice will be heard. And I think you're going to hear voices that are angry about a lot that's gone on in our society. Now we're going, by the way, we have Professor Michael Hudson coming up. He's going to give you the most in-depth discussion. I'm going to be asking him all about what's happening with Russia and the world, so you'll get an honest, objective view, not just the nonsense, the propaganda coming out of the halls of Congress, and behind that is the offices and the CIA and the deep state. That'll be an interesting discussion coming up in just a moment. But I want to get one more in here before we do that. We're going to hear the real Anthony Fauci. This is from RFK's new documentary on the real Anthony Fauci, based upon his best-selling book. It's two clips of information you're probably not aware of that has been left out of all the mainstream media and all the dialogue or debates to give you a better understanding of how little science there was supporting the decisions made by Anthony Fauci. Here are the two clips.
He gave me a transcript of a secret meeting that had occurred between the leading public health officials and the pharmaceutical industry that had occurred in the year 2000. And the precursor of that meeting was an internal study that had been done in 1999 by CDC following this explosion in the vaccine schedule, and that began in 1989. We started seeing the beginning of the autism epidemic and an epidemic of other neurological and autoimmune diseases. And when the first data set came back, it was shocking. Children who had received that vaccine had an 1,135% greater chance of getting a subsequent autism diagnosis than kids who did not. They spend most of the time talking about how to hide these associations from the American public and what their strategy will be for conducting studies. It ended up being very, very fraudulent studies. I got a hold of that transcript, and I published excerpts from it in Rolling Stone and Salon simultaneously. And immediately, there was a storm of controversy pressuring Rolling Stone and Salon to take down the article. You know, I was initially shocked to see this level of censorship and the control that the pharmaceutical industry exercises over the American media. I was doing, at that time, probably 60 speeches a year for a significant part of my income, a lot of them at universities and corporate events. Those speeches disappeared. I was writing every 6 months an op-ed for the New York Times, and they stopped publishing me, not only on vaccine issues, but on any issue, on environmental issues, etc. You get deplatformed if you tell the truth and or if you say anything that challenges government orthodoxies.
Let me ask you about vaccines. There's obviously been a controversy with children's vaccines about whether or not they might cause autism. What is your view on that?
I have a strong view on that. There's zero evidence that the vaccines that were in question, particularly measles and MMR,
bring it down.
Anything at all to do with the development.
Okay, we're stopping right there for this one clip. Why? Because we had Richard Gale on, and Richard was able to find 162 separate studies from respected journals showing there was a connection to neurological damage, including autism, from the vaccines. We also had the exclusive interview with Dr. Brian Hooker, whose son developed a vaccine injury, and he filed for Freedom of Information Act request just to see what was in the vaccine that might have led to this. He's a professor of chemistry at a college in California. And in the rarest of all rare situations, a Dr. William Thompson from the CDC called him back, and they had this conversation. And then somewhere over the next several weeks of conversations, Thompson made a confession, and he asked to be forgiven because he said, we faked the data. We found a large increase in autism in African-American children, young children, males, 36 months and younger, over 324% increase in autism. That would have given legitimacy to a study of a group of pathologists who were working on 12 autistic children trying to find was the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine contributing to this. Now, they didn't make a statement, but they published an article in The Lancet about their suspicions, and these were some of the world's leading gastroenterologists. They were looking in the gut of the children who had autism, and that's what they found. But they never said that the vaccine caused autism. And for putting that in The Lancet, and they had all been published in peer-reviewed literature before, all of them were attacked. They were vilified. They were called frauds. Their whole reputations were destroyed. That's when I entered the picture, and I did a six-hour special on that, on just one of the people, the doctors involved, including doing an hour debate with his nemesis in Great Britain. So in any case, Thompson said that, yes, a whole group, all of them, who had testified before Congress and lied, yes, they knew that there was an association between autism and the MMR vaccine, but it was hidden. Do you know that he has never been called before Congress to testify on under oath? It would destroy the CDC, which should be destroyed and taken out of business, and because it's a completely corrupt organization. Now, there's Anthony Fauci, who would have known all this, and you just heard him lie. Okay? So that's what we're up against. The mainstream media is not allowing those of us who have the background and credentials and the scholarship and knowledge to challenge people like Fauci. He's allowed to say anything he wants, and all they do is cover for him. Now, let's go to clip two. Clip two, Rodney. And then we'll take a break and come back with Dr. Michael Hudson in what will be a very interesting interview.
Well, I visited the State Institution for the Mentally Retarded, and I think particularly at Willowbrook that we have a situation that borders on a snake pit.
I remember very well when I was 11 years old, my father kicking down the door of the Willowbrook State School, which he called a snake pit because they were doing experiments on children with intellectual disabilities.
The children live in filth, but many of our fellow citizens are suffering tremendously.
You had a lot of money at stake with pharmaceutical companies, so there was huge incentives, and there was career incentives for doctors who were doing these kind of experiments.
Most people cannot imagine that there are people, especially medical doctors, which Dr. Fauci is, can disregard the humanity of people, including children. It was a horrific abuse, and because it was government-sponsored together with the pharmaceutical companies, they had kind of free reign. New York State and New York City provided the children.
The Vera Institute, relying mostly on New York City Administration for Services documents, confirmed 80 deaths and many other children suffered serious harm.
The 1986 Act was created and signed into law by Reagan.
It allegedly created a program for compensation of children who were injured by their vaccines or who died, and they would get some level of compensation. It was meant to make vaccines safer, and it gave virtually blanket liability protection to vaccine manufacturers and healthcare providers who are providing vaccines.
The 1986 Injury Compensation Act was a real game changer because all of the drug companies that were making vaccines were deciding that they were going to not do vaccines anymore unless they got liability protection because they were getting sued at every turn.
Now, the blanket liability protection created a boomtown. It created a gold rush. And the sad reality is a whole new industry of recklessly developed vaccines that are highly profitable. And it did not lead to compensation to children who were injured. And it absolutely did not lead to safer vaccines.
That's one of the tragedies that is across the board when it comes to public health. Because you see, when doctors join forces with government, they no longer comply with medicine's mission and sacred oath to first do no harm to the individual patient. They become agents of government and they do what they're told.
A retrovirus is a primitive life form that has no capacity to replicate on its own, which is something that's true of all other viruses. The retrovirus injects its RNA into an existing cell where an enzyme called reverse transcriptase converts viral RNA into DNA, which is then inserted or spliced into the host cell's DNA.
In the late 1980s, when I was at the Salk Institute as a graduate student, when I was in my 20s, I was working on trying to understand how RNA gets packaged into retroviruses, because retroviruses were the leading way for gene therapy to be developed and potentially applied. That idea was, well, if you can use RNA as a drug, what would you use it for? So my belief was using RNA as a drug to produce a vaccine response by expressing a foreign protein. And so I worked on that. And
it's a nearly 3-hour documentary. It's in two parts. I suggest you download it and watch it on The Real Anthony Fauci. We're going to take a quick break and come back with my guest, Dr. Michael Hudson. Please stay with us. And now to my guest, Dr. Michael Hudson, as a part of our continuing series on conversations with remarkable minds. The topic is the titanic shifts in the global economic order and what Putin's Vildaue speech tells us about the New World Order. And I'm sure most people will not have heard the speech, but Dr. Hudson will deal with it. And Michael Hudson is one of our nation's finest, most important economists, Wall Street financial analyst. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts called him the world's best economist. He is the president of the Institution for the Study of Long-Term Economic Trends and a distinguished research professor of economics at the University of Missouri. He was the chief economic policy advisor for Representative Dennis Kucinich's presidential campaign, and he's also advised the White House, the State Department, Defense Departments, and served as an economic advisor to other governments, including Iceland, Latvia, and China. He's written many books and articles. His most recent must-read book is The Destiny of Civilization: Finance, Capitalism, Industrial Capitalism, or Socialism, which explains the reasons for crisis in the United States and other Western nations due to a drainage of income, excessive indebtedness, and a collapse of industrialization. His website is michael-hudson.com. Nice to have you with us today.
Well, it's good to be here, Gary.
We're going to speak about President Putin's address to the Vildaue conference in Russia last week, which some objective geopolitical analysts consider to be one of this century's most memorable and important speeches so far, though you will hear none of that in the mainstream media. It was more philosophical than most of Putin's lectures. quoting different philosophers and literary figures from Dostoevsky and Pushkin. I would also make a note to our listeners that in addition to Putin's formal speech that lasted over an hour, he took questions and answers from the moderator and audience, which included participants from many foreign countries, including the U.S., Europe, for an additional 3 hours, all extemporaneous, nothing of it scripted. Imagine Biden speaking nonstop for 4 hours, and he would talk for 15 minutes, take questions for 10, and then absentmindedly wander off the stage. I didn't notice that Putin's primary message deviated from much of his memorable speech at Munich in 2007, when he laid out a scenario for the emergence of a new multipolar world that is contrary to the unipolar world represented by the United States, European Union, and United Kingdom, and the World Economic Forum, and the Council on Foreign Relations, and the multilateral institutions such as the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank. They speak as one, and he's saying, hold on, we have a whole world with a lot of different views and customs and traditions. Shouldn't those also be respected? And this unipolar world has been completely defined by the United States and what the U.S. demands the rest of the world follow. But it should be noted, Putin stated very clearly, this multipolar world is not intended to replace the West's unipolar world vision. Rather, every nation has the sovereign right and freedom to simply not buy into it. If the U.S. and European Union want to rule themselves in this unipolar model, fine. They're free to do so. But he's saying, don't expect or demand other nations do the same. Also, when we hear our leaders like Obama and Biden or Trudeau and European Commission's von der Leyen speak about the rules-based order, which all other nations must follow or else be sanctioned or face regime change, this refers to the rules that the United States created. They didn't ask anyone else's opinion. This is a form of manifest destiny. Although it should be said that the U.S. and European Union don't follow their own rules that they want to impose upon other nations. So you've attended the Baldea conference in the past and have followed closely Putin's speeches over the years. Michael, please explain this new multipolar-based economic order that is emerging, that is challenging the West, and how is it fundamentally different than the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab's global unipolar, single vision, single government, single stakeholder, overseeing and overriding everyone else. The Russians, including the foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, frequently call a multipolar world a fair world order. And if anyone were to listen to Putin's address intently, it should be clear that this is a new paradigm that is in many ways fairer, more respectful of nations and other civilizations and cultures to develop themselves domestically without interference by the United States and Western allies. Please take us on that journey so that we can better understand what is happening and what China and Russia and India and Brazil in South America, and now new members like wanting to get into the BRICS group, including Saudi Arabia and other countries. What does this mean? Could be a challenge to the dollar as maintaining its dominance over the, let's say, the next 5 or 10 years, instead of looking at the reality that there are other people and other currencies that are being considered also. The forum is yours.
Well, both Putin and Foreign Minister Lavrov have been pretty much saying the same thing for the last year. And Putin's speech was simply tying together the logic that he's been explaining, especially since the February attack on the Russian speakers in Ukraine and Russia's response. Think of what Putin originally came into power in the late 1990s believing, when he first became president, he was basically a neoliberal. He really believed that the future of Russia was going to be a one of mutual gain between Russia, Western Europe, and the United States. And what the Russians were thinking of specifically was that now that they had round down their military economy, they could devote more of their capital investment to actually producing goods and services, and especially real estate, because in the down to the 90s, most Russians had to live with share apartments with other families, and there was just a malaise throughout Russia. The idea and the hope of Putin had been that Germany specifically would take the lead in developing Russian industry, and in exchange, Russia would pay for this help in industrialization to produce more modern cars and machinery and consumer goods. In exchange, Russia would supply what it had plenty of, oil and gas. Because what Russia has that other countries really don't is the energy. And in every country for the last 100 years, national income and gross national product have gone up exactly on the same trend as energy usage per worker. And since Russia provided energy in the form of oil and gas, it seemed reasonable that here was a basis for mutual gain. Well, it turned out that this was not the American idea at all. Almost immediately upon Putin taking office, the United States tried to work with Michael Kartakovsky at Yukos Oil to sell Russia's major oil resources to the United States, essentially to Exxon. And the Americans would own Russian oil and essentially treat Russia as it had treated Saudi Arabia and Iraq and Libya. And very soon it became clear that the idea of the new economic order that the United States had offered, basically a bank-run economic order, was simply a U.S. takeover of the Russian economy. Well, this made it clear that the United States and Europe had no interest at all in developing Russian industry or raising living standards, that it had sort of arranged the whole privatization ripoff of kleptocracy in the 1990s under Boris Yeltsin simply as a means of having the United States take over Russia. So obviously that dream didn't work. Well, fast forward to what's happened since February. The United States has earlier in the year had seized all of Venezuela's gold reserves. It asked London to grab Venezuela's gold. And then after the war began, it seized all of Russia's $300 billion in financial investments in the West and essentially confiscated all of the money that Russia had here and the money that Russian citizens had held in U.S. banks. So the idea was that it's obviously impossible for Russia really to rely on trade and investment with the United States. The United States also threatened to cut Russia off from the computer system that banks use to transfer money from one account to another. The United States said, we have the ability to polarize and just paralyze Russia by using a computer program so that nobody can use their bank account anymore. Nobody can write a check. Nobody can use the ATM machines. So obviously, Russia saw this as coercive, and there's interference in it, in its affairs. And basically, the United States declared economic war, not only on Russia, but also President Biden and Blinken made it clear that the economic war is against China as well, and against Iran. And Russia realized, to put this basically in perspective, Russia realized that the American means of controlling the world economy is to have a unipolar economy, that's the word that Putin used, complete control from Washington, and what it calls a rules-based order is not the order of law, not the United Nations international law, not the world court law that the United States does not join, but whatever America finds to be in its national interest. So obviously, Russia has no reason at all to hold any dollars anymore, because if it holds dollars, or if other countries, including Saudi Arabia and China, hold dollars, these dollars can simply be grabbed by the United States to say, aha, now you have no money to spend. Your economy is polarized. So, of course, Russia, Saudi Arabia, and other countries are now moving out of the dollars, and instead of denominating their world trade in dollars, as the copper trade, the metals trade, the food trade were denominated in dollars, there is a move away from dollars into their own domestic currencies. The world is dividing into two separate parts. On the one part, you'll have the U.S. economy run by the banks. When people use the word neoliberalism, they mean a bank-run economy for the financial sector and for the 1%. And against this, there will be China, Russia, other countries joining the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, India, Iran, that are basically a mixed economy where the governments of these countries are providing basic infrastructure in the public domain at subsidized prices, not privatizing them. So instead of privatized health care that takes 18% of America's GDP, the Chinese and almost all other countries provide health care freely. So Russia realizes that the United States has basically priced its labor and its industry out of world markets. There's no way that the United States can run a trade surplus based on its industry. So the question is, how can the United States control the world economy if it's not an industrial power anymore, as it was in 1945? How can it control other economies if it's basically just a financialized economy without any industry? Well, the answer is that the United States has tried to control other economies by its control of the oil trade. If the United States can control oil through its major oil companies and the companies of its European satellites, such as the French oil company Total and the British Petroleum, then it can essentially turn off the electricity, turn off the power of other countries. And this is why everywhere the United States has gone to war in the last 20 years, in Afghanistan, where the oil...
We're taking a break for WBAI, then they're going to go to their news. You can continue listening to this interview by going to prn.live.
In Iraq, where the United States now is stealing Iraq's oil and will not leave the country and is basically assassinating any Iraqis that try to retake the oil that is their own power. Syria, for its oil, where President Trump has said, we spent money invading them, we've got to take the oil as in exchange. Libya, where the United States essentially destroyed the economy so that Libya could not take over the oil. The isolation of Venezuela is an oil country. See, here is the U.S. idea of controlling the world through controlling of the dollar and the money and banking system on the one hand, and of oil trade on the other, without working and simply acting as a rentier, simply as acting as a monopolist, and is the banker creating its own money on computer keyboards to buy control of other countries, all based by a military. What Russia, China, Iraq, Iran, other Saudi Arabia are realizing is that what's the issue here for the war that's now in Ukraine is, as President Biden said quite correctly, this is the beginning of a 20-year war. And if we don't win, basically, we're going to blow up the world. We are going to fight to prevent any other country becoming self-sufficient. Because if other countries, such as Russia or China or India, are self-sufficient, then we won't have any means of controlling them. And so Putin's speech basically was saying, if the United States cannot control an economy, it is going to destroy it. And if it can't destroy it through monetary manipulation and computer derangement or by military conflict, as in Ukraine, then it's simply going to step up the military. The United States, just before Putin's speech, again said, our objective is to break up Russia, have a regime change with a color revolution, remove Putin from office in the same way that we removed Saddam Hussein, torturing him in the process, and removed Libya's leader, Gaddafi. And we will divide Russia into six different countries so that they can never be a self-sufficient whole again. And we're also going to do the same with China. We're going to break China into six different countries so that China will never be able to be self-sufficient. The idea is that of the United States foreign policy, and this was just announced in its national security 48-page briefing from President Biden, is that no country should be self-sufficient in energy, money, or the United States, and every country should sell its commanding heights, its infrastructure, its communication system, its railroads, its communication system, its telephone system to the United States investors. Well, obviously, this is a declaration of economic war, and what Putin was doing and was realizing that he now has the support of, I think, 82% approval rating in of the Russian population. One of the highest in the world, that he can work with China and with Iran and now Saudi Arabia, too, creating an alternative economic system. So what's at issue is not simply ownership of oil and banks and infrastructure. It's whether economies are going to be a mixed economy with government and private enterprise together, but government providing the basic infrastructure at a subsidized rate, public education, public health, public housing, public transportation, as you have in China. Well, President Biden's response to this is, well, the world is dividing into democracy versus autocracy. By democracy, he means an oligarchy that's run by the banks, polarizing where between the 1% of the creditors and the 99% of an of an impoverished, debt-ridden population. What he means by autocracy is any government that has public investment, public education, public infrastructure, and public subsidy. The hypocrisy, of course, and this is what President Putin noticed, is that on the one hand, President Biden has just given, I think, $54 billion of subsidy to the computer industry, the information technology industry, to develop technological supremacy that it's trying to deny any other country using that technology, and on the other hand, saying that this is a private enterprise and a free market. So Putin made fun of the fact that what the United States calls a free market is a market controlled by central planners in Wall Street and the Defense Department. A free market, he said, for the United States is something controlled by the military and by the banks, financiers, to promote American interests in an adversarial way with the rest of the world. And the theory that if any other country gains, it's a loss from the United States, and the ideal is to make all other countries as dependent on the U.S. economy as the European satellites are, England, Germany, and the European community. And so basically what Putin is saying, well, all right, we've got to break away from the United States-controlled world economy. And what does this mean? It means that instead of working through the International Monetary Fund, which is basically an arm of the U.S. military, Russia will and China together, the other countries are joining in creating their own international financial system so that they can trade in their own currencies. Just as Saudi Arabia recently agreed to price its oil in and its trade with Russia in rubles, and its trade with China in yen. So basically, a country.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, but we're out of time. We'll have a continuation of this as a part two on an upcoming program. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day. Stay tuned for Utrecht's Lead.